Today's podcast brought to you by Elders and Reinagard by Zoetis. Welcome back to Regulars and a Load of First Timers. You are on the grill for Beef Central, and today we return to our regular experts on prices and markets, the General Manager of the RMA Network, supporting independent stock and station agents throughout Australia, Chris Harry. Hello and welcome. You're on the road somewhere.
Just on my way to the Narracourt store sale, Kerry.
And once again, his old mate, the King of Graphics, the statistics guru from episode 3, Matthew Dalgleish. Hello again and welcome.
G'day, Kerry.
And first up today, a four-letter word, which is a standout, or was a sort of standout in today's market, and cows, COWS, they were red hot, now they're not, yet they're still putting as much as we can process onto ships. What's happening in the cow market at present, Chris?
Look, there's two markets at present. You've got the northern market, which is going into main supply, and then you've got the southern market, and there's a reasonable price difference. So 2 weeks ago, we saw best cows get to $2.90 in the yards. That come off on Monday, 30 to 40 cents. Rain event in the north spiked the market. But the demand is there for the cow. And, you know, store cows, if you were putting them out for August, September, to me, that would be a very good trade for you.
Yeah, there was some delay in the muster up north. So those cattle are now heading south, which I suppose has had an impact as well.
Oh, definitely, you know, and the northern market, you know, a lot of those supply lines are aligned to pre-booked cows, and if they can't get them out, you know, your processors, then they swing to their feedlot inventory to take up that slack, or they have to step into the sale yard to buy extras. But the southern market, we're at the time of year when the cow numbers drop away dramatically, and if you have a look at the freight differential, you know, it costs you 60 cents a kilo to get them from sort of southern Queensland down to the south of Victoria. So that pretty much shows the difference in values.
Matty, give us a word picture of the current export demand out of the United States, which is going gangbusters.
Yeah, it is. It's incredibly strong. Obviously, they're in their fifth year of a herd liquidation, and they've been working down their cold stores as well over this period. Their production's down on previous years, so there's a real kind of shortage there, and obviously them being the biggest, one of the biggest trade partners, their trade partners, but also being a big competitor into markets like Japan and South Korea, yeah, and increasingly to China. You know, they're kind of, with them not being as competitive, you know, it's making their exports really competitive to not just to the US, but to all these other key trading places as well.
A quick check on the markets according to MLA, Chris, the current processor cow indicated $2.10, which seems remarkable to me, given that's down 58 cents on this week last year. But the market chatter seems to be about a hot or increasing market. How do you explain $2.10?
I think the weighting, without looking at the inputs, Matt might be able to help you. I think you've got a big number of Queensland northern cattle in there, and I think they are distorting that indicator. It's a bit like the Ecky when there's big runs of cattle in Queensland. The south is definitely in advance of that number. You know, 210, store cows.
Yeah.
You buy store cows at 180 to 210, you put them out, you put weight on them, you're going to make a quid in a couple of months' time.
Yeah. Now, the cow price, of course, was smashed in November of last year. It went back to around $1.40, thank you. Was this the infamous forecast of another dry period that caused this extraordinary flood of cows onto the market?
I think we're getting back to a normality of supply now. The price is always going to go up. They never flat track. But March has always been a turn off for cows. Northern New South Wales, southern Queensland coming into the weaner sales. Dry cows come on. You go into the muster in Queensland. No one in the south wants to carry old cows or dry cows through the winter. So that's the normal run of cattle hitting the market. The price sags under supply. I think we're back to what you'd call a normality of pricing through the season. We haven't got the rain event as we had over 3 years ago that just blew everything up.
Now, given there might be legal action along here, is that big price crash of November a topic of conversation? Matt, do you hear it where you have meetings?
Yeah, look, it was certainly. There was a lot of questioning too around what were the fundamentals behind it. And it was very much just a fear-driven decline. And then once we started to see, you know, that kind of price fall, it added, you know, you got this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy element to it, that people saw the price declines and then they kind of rushed to offload as well. So it, you know, created its own kind of sentiment. But yeah, to me, it looked absolutely a reaction to what the Bureau was forecasting. And look, the odd thing is, Kerry, that we often say with producers that, you know, they should be more proactive, be more aware of what's, you know, impending, so you're not a forced seller. So from that perspective, though, yeah, given the forecast, they were probably doing the right thing, trying to adjust their size of their herd, you know, in advance. You know, and it just this time around, it proved that the accuracy of the forecast wasn't as predicted. So it proved to be the wrong decision. But you know, the fact they were being proactive, I think, is a good thing in the long run. And had it have turned dry, it would have proven to be a great move.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of a 50-50 thing. It'll be interesting to see how this turns out in the courts, if it gets to the courts. So what's the long-term future or intermediate-term future, indeed? How long is this demand for cows likely to go before we sort of hit rock bottom and even out to a normal type of market?
Look, I think the seasonally made the season when you start to see the numbers peaking to a degree, because you've got the south are starting to kind of move into that winter phase, so they're kind of starting to dry up, but they've still got numbers flowing, and then you've got the north that are kind of ramping up. So May traditionally, and if you look at processor margins, May is the season when they usually make their best margin, you know, for that part of the year, and it's because of that volume it's kind of like the tipping point. So I think we're going to see beyond May it probably will start to, you know, change the dynamics, but at least until then I think that's going to kind of persist.
Yeah. Time for a break. You're on The Grill with Beef Central, back after this short, informative message. Breathe easy with Rhinogard, the only single-dose intranasal vaccine for control of IBR in your cattle. Get in control of bovine respiratory disease, that's BRD, before it begins. Just deliver a single intranasal spray of Rhinogard for rapid IBR control and add a single dose of BoviShield MH1 for protection against pneumonia. For rapid protection against MH and IBR in your weaners and pre-feedlot cattle, breathe easy with BoviShield and Rhinogard. Available from your local vet today.
For over 180 years, Elders has proudly been supporting Australian livestock producers. Elders supports your business across the production cycle with more than 350 livestock agents, access to specialist livestock advice and auction services. Draw on our established relationships to buy and sell commercial and stud livestock across domestic and international markets. Enjoy Del Credere guaranteed payments when you sell with Elders. Livestock funding also available, subject to approval. Elders, for Australian agriculture.
Welcome back. We're on The Grill with Beef Central, Chris Harris from the RMA Network and Matty Dalglish from Episode 3. I have to say the general beef picture is very rosy indeed. Red meat exports in March, 182,000 tonnes, second largest March figure on record. China, South Korea exports down, but MLA explains this by the fact that the exports last year were big ones, and so it's only natural that they go down this year, but it does look good in terms of exports, doesn't it, Chris?
Definitely, and no one does it just for practice. So when you're putting out volumes like they are, it means that it's going places. There's been a couple of disruptions. We've heard just recently, like the Iranian missiles, and that did stop the flow of some beef consignments and lamb consignments, just purely and simply on the embargoes that were put in immediately there.
Yeah,
but we're also seeing a bit of a change in dynamics on that beef side. You know, a couple of orders out there are paying more for grass now, grass cattle, than what they're paying for supplementary fed cattle, not feedlot, but, you know, those grain-assisted cattle, which is just a change in consumer demand, I suppose.
Yeah. I don't like to mention specific breeds, but I have to mention the Wagyu conference in Cairns recently, 650 attendees. Have you ever heard of a larger breed conference in recent years? I mean, it's just absolutely extraordinary, 650 at one conference.
Oh, the Wagyu conference for a long time has been pretty sexy, Terry.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a lot of people that are very invested in their breed, targeting a premium end market. yeah, they tend to make that a pretty considerable event.
Yeah, Matty, what does it say about Wagyu and its future?
Yeah, look, it has its swings certainly, but I think it's in that very much a global kind of premium niche, you know, that holds it up in its own right. So I think despite the kind of normal cyclical flows we can see, I think the prospects are still pretty good. I do question around those numbers at the conference. You know, if it is that they're also sampling Wagyu at the meal times, maybe that's part of the attraction as well, Kerry.
I know Australia, according to broad figures, Australia is now exporting 10 times as much Wagyu as Japan exports, which is amazing. I know it's all it's apples and oranges in a little way, but 10 times as much is an outstanding number, I think.
Wagyu job, Kerry, it's just got a little bit of a wobble at present. It's not bad, but I think there's a supply wobble there at present. We saw it about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, and I just think there's a little bit of a correction in the market for those secondary, you know, type Wagyu. Just because it's had a Wagyu bull doesn't mean it's the right animal at the other end.
Yeah, on the other hand, I just heard a mention the other day that Wagyu trimmings in America are very, very attractive.
Nothing like branding Wagyu minced meat. I don't know how the tenderness comes into that, but anyway, it's fine.
So what else in the sale yards, Chris? What's the chatter? What's the cheap whinge among cattle people at present?
It's actually not too bad. It's the weaner sales in the south, you know, further away from Queensland determine, you know, freight difference. But a lot of your good weaners, Angus weaners, ranging from 350 up to 430. Probably the question being asked was, the money being written on feeder steers going in doesn't really reflect what's being paid for the weaners. You know, if you're writing 370 going in and you're buying them for 420, where's the margin?
Yeah.
But, you know, that market's operated. Heifers, that's probably been the noise. They are undersold at present. A lot of people saying, you know, the heifers aren't making what we thought they should make. But in saying that, there's some quite good orders out there at present that are looking, you know, for 500 or 1,000 to trade to join for next year, which, you know, I think smart business if you've got the feed.
Yeah. Matty, you address a lot of industry people. What are the concerns you hear at conferences, et cetera?
In terms of, I guess it's a longer-term prospect, and it goes back to that concern we saw with the weather in the lead-up to the start of this year. You know, it looks like we've dodged another bullet in terms of the dry spell, but I think it's only a matter of time before that comes. So I think that's something that's still playing on people's minds is when does that come? It doesn't look like it'll be this year, but, you know, I don't know if we can continue to go through the rest of the decade without having some level of a dry patch, around the corner. It just depends on where it is and for how long and how dry and how long it lasts.
Yeah, let's talk about our ovine friends. Lamb exports in March, 36% up on March last year. Again, our biggest market is the United States. Lots of positive vibes in the lamb and sheep market of recent months. Matty?
It is. Part of what's driving that too as well in terms of those huge volumes were the fact that we are very price competitive still. It's really only New Zealand now presently, and that was only a short while ago that New Zealand did below us, but if you compare us and contrast our pricing, you know, versus other kind of players in the space, we're very much the cheapest along with New Zealand. So that's a bit of, you know, it's a good sign that we've got captured some market share back and that we've got a very robust picture regards volumes. But I think there'd be a few producers out there that get anxious when they're looking at their cost of production in that space. I think they'd like to see another dollar on top of it. And I don't think that slightly higher pricing here would actually stem the flows and the volumes of exports that much because the demand's definitely there.
Yeah.
It's just the downside's only that it's probably because we're cheap seeing some of these really big volumes too.
Yeah, Chris, there are lots of positives in the sale yards for lambs.
Yeah, I think it's very finely balanced at present, Kerry. The supply is the trigger point. We saw the rain through Victoria last week. You know, I think Ballarat ended up with 40,000 because the tractors started. I was at Adelaide Plains yesterday. There's a lot of unfinished lambs coming in because farmers have started their tractors. Talking to the Western Districts, lower southeast into Wagga, the numbers of lambs in the paddock are falling away very quickly now. So I think supply and demand picture is going to flick over. I'd reckon after Anzac Day, I think then you'll start to see some price movement on lamb and normally mutton follows after that.
Now, there was a mention of New Zealand lamb prices just a couple of minutes ago. From memory, New Zealand used to dominate the American market. Is that still the case, or is Australia on top now?
I know Australia's very much the dominant player there. And that, like, New Zealand capacity has been reducing in terms of their availability to supply certain markets too. So, I think this is the first year now in about 15 years that they've seen a very minor increase to their flock there. I think they're up about 0.2% for this coming year as a forecast. But for the last 15 years, they've been in pretty much steady decline in terms of their flock size and breeding year number size. So, and that's played out over the last decade now, I'd say, that New Zealand's gone from being the dominant exporter out of the Australia-New Zealand mix to now it's very much in favour of Australia. I think we're sitting at now, or last year, we were above 50% of global exports came out of Australia, and New Zealand are down in the low 30s now.
Wow. American consumption of lamb forever, for a long, long time, was about a kilo per person. And I think it's still about a kilo per person, but we're selling more and more and more. Is this simply a numbers game that there are more and more people in America, so we're selling more and more, but not per person?
It's also a bit of a change to the demographic as well. So increased kind of Middle Eastern and even into the Caribbean, those population increases there. Some of the southern kind of or Central Americans that are in America, they favour mutton, and they can interchange mutton for goat. So that's all this kind of ethnic market, I guess they call it, that's increasing some of that as well. But you're right, if you look at the US diet, I think from their meat diet, lamb's about 1% of their meat consumption across all the different meat types. In the lamb space, the US are our biggest market in terms of lamb, and second biggest if you're combining lamb and mutton together behind China. So they're a huge market by volume, but the proportions are still very small. And what that says to me is that there's a huge opportunity to continue to grow that market.
Yeah. Chris, back home, the feedlots, it's a pretty opaque business as usual, but the big fellas are now mostly feeding their own cattle and not as much custom feeding as they used to be. They must be doing very well at present.
Yeah, I think they're going all right. Like I said before, no one does this stuff at practice. There's plenty more fun jobs than just feeding cattle every day. Some of the cattle that we bought out of the wiener sales sent north, talked to one of the feedlots that took those cattle. They made a good margin. I think they made $75 a head they made out of those January cattle. They bought some heavier models, and they had that heat wave on the top of them. But the southern feed ration is considerably cheaper than the northern feed ration at present. And there's still quite a few feedlots in the south that do custom feed, and space in those feedlots has been absorbed by some pretty big players to take advantage not only of price but also of that ration cost.
Matty, the processors, extra shifts are now part of the regular roster. Again, good time for processors. Would they have their money printing machines on clicked on by now?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I don't think their kind of positive margins are as strong as what we saw through 14, 15, but they're not far off those levels. So, and considering we're not presently in drought, that correction in price we saw last year added to the coffers substantially, I think, because the demand export-wise was still there, so they were able to really enhance margin through then. It's slightly off now with a bit of a recovery in price than we saw through the late December into January. But I think, when you look, the numbers are still pretty robust and pretty strong in terms of margin and probably only fractionally behind record levels, really.
Yeah. The ongoing issue, skilled staff, especially for meatworks, but also generally for properties. Chris, is this still an ongoing issue?
Anyone that's got a skill set, they don't want to undersell themselves these days. I'm not saying that you've become mercenary by any means. We saw that in the shearing industry and it didn't do anyone any good. Yeah. But a good farm manager now is well sought. Speaking to a couple of the processors, and they've got double shifts going, but staff are still their issue. And if you have a look at Burke Abattoir, which is a TFI I've got doing goat, it's a really good abattoir. They've got it up and going. It's running extremely well. But staff, you've got to get someone that wants to live in Burke and work in a meatworks. And
that's a pretty small pool these days. I don't think you'd drag them out of the middle of Sydney or Adelaide, put it that way.
You don't train a good boner overnight, do you? I was talking to a real jobs expert recently, and he said he has 5,000 vacancies for skilled workers. He could fill them immediately if he had the people with the skills.
Yeah, and that's across every... I've talked to people in the nursing industry who have said the same thing. School teachers, anyone regional, the amount of inquiry for skilled staff is way outstripping the supply.
Oh, a bit off subject, not about the markets at all, but it's still the question of regional and rural Australia. What's the answer? Should we bring back those middle colleges or 6 months or 12 months course in driving a tractor, for example, fencing, livestock handling? Could we bring back those? Maybe that would help.
Well, so I think we saw the syndicate try to reinstate Longreach, and even though they had enough money, it never got up. So, look, I don't know what the focus is from the government on those type of things. So.
Well, the focus has been to close them down, which is bizarre.
But in saying that, you've got a lot of the TAFEs across Australia that they're actually starting to get more focused on specific industry, you know, whether it be agency or whether it be shearing and so forth, to try and elevate. And they've been identified as key skill sets, which I think that's a positive move.
Matt, when you're at the microphone at a conference, what do you hear? Do you hear staff shortages, skill shortages, et cetera, again and again?
Yeah, that's a pretty common one. Like Chris said, I don't think it's just across the agricultural sector. There's some areas in like you said, healthcare, aged care, education that are equally as desperate. I kind of think that, you know, part of the answer obviously is the internal market and getting the system right on the educational side and the opportunities there. For that career pathway, but I don't think that the visa system, you know, and what we're doing with regards to bringing in skilled work is fit for purpose yet either. I think there's still some tinkering that could be done there to try and get that going. I don't think the whole solution is an overseas solution, but I think certainly for some key kind of markets that, and Chris kind of alluded to it before as well, I think that there are some jobs that the domestic worker or young person doesn't. It's not a job necessarily that they favour. You know, just even if the training was available, they may not take it up. So I think we've got to really address some key crucial roles, and if it means we have to get them from overseas, then so be it.
Yeah, it's well said. I think that's a story around the world for certain types of jobs. It doesn't matter where we are. There's certain types of jobs that locals simply won't do. Now, we're about to head to Beef and Rocky. What do you think we should expect, maybe on a theme? It must be about carbon, perhaps? Is that what we can expect up in Beef this year?
I think most conferences have a fairly significant sustainability and carbon aspect. I'm at a conference today in Melbourne, the second day of the Future Ag one. That's the big German group that did a huge expo overseas in Hanover. It's the first time in Australia to do that, and pretty much all through the conference, it's got focus on sustainability and carbon and that aspect. So I think you don't get in any conferences these days where it's not a key part of it.
Chris, as we hear more and more about carbon, is it just simply more and more confusing?
The agency training that we do, we ran a course in March, and part of that, compulsory part of that, is a sustainability assessment now. Yeah. And we had Mark Inglis from TFI come along and run through sustainability and also MLA. And it's bloody complex. And the high level, it's all coming down from up high. And I think there are so many variant conversations being had that the ground level farmer, the agent, just the man on the street is absolutely confused in where it's going. And I think the wrong decision could actually come back and bite someone for quite a considerable amount of time, because we actually don't know what it should look like yet. We know what everyone wants it to be, but no one can definitively say this is the value or this is the reason you're doing this.
Matty, is that something you hear as well? That there's a misunderstanding about the lack of understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also if you're talking around that kind of carbon space and selling credits, I think that area is, I'd be treading very carefully there as a producer too. I think, you know, getting your baseline set, understanding what's happening on your farm, getting some numbers running, you know, so you know where you are and where you sit. I think all of that's a great idea. But, you know, thinking of entering into some form of a contractual deal where you're selling carbon, I'd be very, very hesitant to go down that pathway at the moment.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree with Matt on that.
Yeah,
get your baseline done. That is so important because irrespective of whether you understand where it's going, if you've got that number, at least you've got your starting point. Don't do it tomorrow. Get it done today.
And if you've got two different opinions, get another one. Now, just finally, I'm going to give you each $20,000 to spend on cattle coming into winter, and you're going to sell them in October. 6 months you've got. What are you buying? Matty?
Chris mentioned heifers being under the year before. I think I'd probably consider it, perhaps.
What, joined heifers or empties or what? What are you going to do?
Like Chris said, I think that it probably depends on your feed is the only clarifying statement, but I think if you got joined, I'd be inclined to go that way.
Chris, yeah, what are you spending $20,000 on? Then you're going to turn them over in October.
I can't go against McCarlton supporting Made in Tamworth, and he suggested that we should be buying store cows and targeting into the late August September cow market.
Wow. Okay. Well, I promise you, this time I will check on how your $20,000 is going in October. Chris Harry from the RMA Network, Matty Dougherty from the Informative Market Intelligence Newsletter, Episode 3. Thank you both for your time today on The Grill on Beef Central.
Thanks, Kerry.
Cheers, Kerry.
And thank you for joining us. Until next time, I'm Kerry Lonigan. This has been The Weekly Grill, brought to you by Elders and Rhinogard by Zoetis.